Hello, everyone, and welcome to Note to Scene, a music news podcast covering everything from pop punk to metalcore. I'm Matt Crane.
I'm Tyler Sharp.
And welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen, where every week we discuss and debate all the biggest news stories in the music scene. Find more episodes of this podcast on iTunes, where you should please rate and review us. Email us at notetoscene@gmail.com. We have so much to talk about this week. Big news from Knucklepuck, Pierce the Veil, and State Champs. But first, we're going to talk about All Time Low, Sleeping with Sirens, Paramore, some of the biggest scene bands, and how they all failed so hard in 2017. All right, let's go. Did you have a chance to do this Spotify time capsule thing that went around the internet this week?
So I did, but I don't usually use Spotify. I use Apple Music. That's what I pay for. But I have a Note to Scene account for our episode Spotify playlists, which listeners, if you're down with that, it's on Spotify. Just search it, you'll find it, subscribe to it. And it actually generated a playlist for the songs that I've been listening to on Spotify since I made that account. And it's kind of crazy because, the very first song on
It's
it
good.
is American Idiot by Green Day, which
It's
is the
good.
first
So
album I ever bought.
for the listeners who don't know what it is Spotify Time Capsule is this playlist that Spotify will do for you where they automatically somehow magically algorithmically generate your favorite songs from high school. Like they just knew. Like with me, they just dead on. And like I don't even listen to Spot. Like, most of If you're like me, and I assume a lot of you are in this respect, like most of your old music from high school is like on your iTunes or your computer. Like Spotify is a relatively new thing that a lot of us didn't have in high school. So the fact that Spotify is able to generate such an interesting playlist of all of your high school favorites, I thought it was really fun. And it really like got movement in the community, especially in the music scene. It was going around. Everyone was like tripping out about it.
Absolutely. You saw screenshots everywhere of
Oh,
people
yeah.
showing what the bots made. And that's the one thing I really don't like about Apple Music is that you don't get, the end of the year stats. I loved that about Spotify when I was a Spotify user. And just like this open world kind of for Spotify. And on Apple Music, everything feels really closed off and cold. But Apple Music just has more options for like deep cuts and stuff. So that's ultimately why I made
I
the
mean, they got
switch.
that iTunes, but what Apple needs to do is just buy Spotify. I mean, like you think about this is obviously the future of music.
Sure.
Spotify is better. It's the better streaming platform. It's the more popular one. Apple Spotify is valued at like I think 16 billion. Apple has 200 billion in cash right now. Like they could buy Spotify, just be the future of streaming. Just own Spotify, keep it as your own product. But yeah, so some interesting ones that made my list. My number one was Constantine by Something Corporate. That's the first one. So that I mean that says a lot. Like I'm the biggest Something Corporate fan. AFI is the Leaving Song Part 2 got on there somehow. Like, what the fuck? Atreyu's Bleeding Mascara.
Yes,
Yes, right.
classic, classic.
Under Oath's Reinventing Your Exit.
Oh man, doesn't get
Right?
better than
Like,
that.
I was just blown away by how dead on this was. Oh, and this won't shock you, Tyler Sharp, but the starting line, The Best of Me, was on there. Blue and Yellow by the Used, an old school fucking Used favorite. Man, I couldn't it got Stray Light Run, Existentialism.
Stray
Dude,
Light
that's a
Run.
deep how like smart does it have to be to get Stray Light Run? You know what I mean? That's not like a big band, you know what I mean? That was like a special small thing.
I don't think anyone has listened to Existentialism on prom night since 2005.
Set me. Shouts to me.
Except Matt.
Shouts to me. It got Brand New, Tommy Gunn. Coheed the Suffering.
Dude.
Dude.
Dude, it's hilarious because we've never, like, you and I have never had a conversation about Coheed, but I could totally see you listening to them in high school.
Oh, dude, that song was just a summer jam in high
Dude,
school.
shout
I
out to
mean,
Favor House Atlantic, man.
absolutely,
Still a
yeah.
banger. That band had some great songs.
Good summer music. So,
Totally.
also, Sales and Voices made
Of
the list.
course, of course.
Of course. Let me see here. Jimmy Eat World Work, which makes sense because I really do love that song, and I am sort of like a Future's truther when it comes to Jimmy Eat World.
Man.
Some Taking Back Sunday made it. Some Linkin Park made it. Little random, but PD Pablo's Freak-A-Leak made it. And I have no explanation for that, but that beat does go hard as fuck.
That's hilarious. For the note to scene time capsule, the first like first
Which we
five.
should point out is the Tyler Sharp time capsule because you're the only one who uses that.
Exactly. So the only thing I've been listening to on here is Under Oath and SoundCloud Rap, and somehow they got I Miss You by Blink-182, Last Resort by Papa Roach, and Mr. Brightside by The Killers all in the top
Oh
five.
man, I love the Killers. I've just been having like a Killers moment again, just revisiting all the great music of the past.
You're not alone. I mean, that album, who expected them to sell that many first week? I think they did 111,000.
On nostalgia alone, on
Right.
just the hope that you know that one song, Run for Cover?
You keep
It was,
saying.
I found out it's a 10-year-old demo. No
Really?
wonder it sounds good and I like it. It's fucking from that era. You know what I mean? That's the only good song on the album, in my opinion. You know, the rest of it is like the man, you know, no.
Right, yeah, not at all. That's interesting because you could totally hear it in that song, but
Yeah.
it's kind of like a diet Mr. Brightside.
Yeah. Oh, totally. So, yeah, I thought the Spotify thing was pretty fun. Like a fun experience. Just watching like a streaming platform create like social movement like that. It's fun.
Definitely.
It's a fun new way we're experiencing music, you know, that
For
we didn't
sure.
used to get to.
It's a good way to capitalize on nostalgia for them.
Absolutely. And we all know nostalgia is like the biggest drug ever. So, quickly, we got to give shouts and rest in peace to the great Tom Petty, who passed away this week. Man, this was a bummer.
Don't think
Kind of came
anyone saw this coming.
out of nowhere, right? Tom Petty, man. Like, it's funny because I had been at the bar with a friend about a week before he died, and they were playing like all '90s music, and we were like doing a guess the song game at the bar, and I was crushing it because it was all this '90s shit, like Live and Collective Soul and all this bullshit that no one needs to know.
Right.
But I had heard growing up, and this one song came on that we both didn't know, and I asked the owner of the bar. I was like, "Hey man, do you know what this is?" And he looked at me and he's like, "This fucking Tom Petty, man! Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Like, and Tom Petty's from, you know, from my area, so where I live now." So he was like, you know, it was like I was like a heretic for not knowing, you know. And I was like, "Oh, sorry, man. You know, like I didn't know, you
Straight
know."
up offended at your lack of
Like,
Tom Petty knowledge.
that's the thing about Petty though, is like, it's just like everybody kind of just like loved and respected him, you know. Like, you didn't nobody hated Tom Petty, you know. You
He
might not have
was
loved him, but like, who hates Tom Petty?
nobody, man. He was an iconoclast. He was arguably the last true rock star. Dude just
Right.
wrote hits and hits and hits, and it was definitely a blind side to see him go. I know my mom kind of took her by surprise. So shout
Yeah.
out to all the Tom Petty fans out there.
Kind of like music that we just like grew up around, you know, and it was just
Sure.
always playing, and you never really maybe necessarily realized it, but you should definitely go, you know, do some Tom Petty digging back. There's some good songs in there you should go listen to. Like, if you haven't at least listened to Free Fallin' yet, like, you should probably cancel yourself, you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, right.
at least do that.
Straight up, the Aaron Gillespie's Free Fallin' cover made me go back when that came out on like Punk Goes Classic in like what, 2010, made me go back and
Oh
look up
my
Tom Petty songs.
God. I forgot that that even happened, dude.
Yep, so after the Tom Petty news set in, I went to Aaron's socials and see what he had to say about it. So
Good scene connection there. I like it. And,
yeah.
you know, I'm not going to try to like make this whole case like, you know, if the scene wouldn't exist without Tom Petty or anything, but like, there are connections. Like, I mean, Dave Grohl was like heavily inspired by Tom Petty growing up, and like, what happens with Nirvana, you know, if Dave Grohl doesn't hear Tom Petty. And a lot of people don't know it, but Dave Grohl almost joined Tom Petty in the Heartbreakers after Kurt died.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so if that happens, we don't get the Foo Fighters. And if we don't get the Foo Fighters, you know, low-key secret of the scene, all these musicians just want to be Dave Grohl. You know what I mean? Dave Grohl's a big idol for a lot of scene musicians. So, you know, things change without Tom Petty in our world, for sure. And Marc Maron actually, like, has a really good comedy special he just put out on Netflix. You should check it out. It's hilarious. But it's kind of poignant because it's before Tom Petty died, but he makes this sort of joke. His bit is like that, you know, America is so divided, Trump Republicans versus liberals. And the one thing everyone agreed on is Petty. You know, it's like you can have someone like, fuck Trump, and then someone like, fuck Obama. But like Petty, right, man? Yeah,
but
Petty.
Petty. Cool.
Like everybody agrees on Petty. You know?
It was the one common ground.
The one common ground we had.
Yeah. When I Won't Back Down comes on, everyone's jamming.
Everyone's like, yeah, you know, fuck you, but right. Petty. All right, we can agree on Petty. Petty's cool.
That's a good point.
Anything else you gotta say about Petty? T-Sharp?
I don't think so. Rest in peace.
Rest in peace, sir. Okay, let's move into our main story of this week, which is all the big scene bands have failed in 2017. so far, 2017 has been a bloodbath, a scorching, and we're kind of just gonna like do the autopsy right now, I guess, because I know it's October and maybe it's a little early, but it's not. Like we've seen towers fall. You know, we've just seen bands that for no reason just failed in 2017. Bands that should have had really big years, and a lot of it was the biggest of the big scene bands. And we're just going to kind of look at that. I figure we should kind of go through like band by band. Tyler, how's that sound?
Yeah, sounds good. It was just basically all the most anticipated albums from the scene kind
like
of flopped this year and saw a significant decrease in sales, streams, and general hype around them. So we didn't have a main story this week because the scene's just kind of on a bit of a low end. So it's, you know, we're just taking this time to look back and see what happened this year and why it all went wrong, basically.
Yeah, like sort of make sense of why 2017 was so bad. I mean, we can start with All Time Low because that's the first and I think the most, like, one of the most obvious examples. So we were really stoked, you know, when they signed A Field by Ramen, and I was really stoked when Dirty Laundry came out. You weren't, but the album came out, you know, and it was just trash, and it only sold, what did we do, like 30,000 first week?
It did 30,000 traditional, 33,000 streaming, so 90% of that total was traditional sales.
And that's coming down from
75,000 traditional,
which Future Hearts did.
Yeah,
so massive. They in sales, it's as if they just didn't matter anymore.
It was a 60% drop,
and the album was really bad, and people don't like it. Like, I don't see All Time Low fans riding for this album, you know what I mean? It kind of just like blurred together.
There's no hype around any of these songs. And I did a little digging, research, and making my notes for this episode. I found that Alex was the only member of the band given any writing credits on this new album. There were 10 additional writers throughout all the songs on the album. And there were 8 additional musicians that played on the album. There was just, I think it came down to the fact that All Time Low were given this second shot at breaking out, which, as we've said on the show before, you talk to those dudes behind closed doors, all they want is to be the biggest pop stars in the world.
And we're talking about Dirty Work here. Like, Dirty Work was their first shot to break out, and man, did they fucking blow it.
Absolutely. And they come back this year, they sign A Field by Ramen, they get the second chance that they really didn't even deserve. And I think all of these producers, their entire team behind them, all these writers, all the cooks in the kitchen came in with basically making All Time Low a clean slate, and everyone had a different view of how they wanted the album to come out. And when you add that many people into a formula, there's no general vision for everything that's going on. The Last Young Renegades is what we get. And these songs are all over the place, and none of them are really that, you know, none of them are there.
Yeah.
There's nothing memorable
about
this album.
Nothing sticks out. And I felt too much 1975. Like, I just felt like they saw what that band were doing, like dark pop rock,
Was definitely a
and they were
part of
like,
it for sure.
they were like, kind of like, we want to try this too. But they half-assed it, and they didn't go far enough with it. So the next band we talk about, and probably the first band we should have talked about because their album just came out, is Sleeping with Sirens. And this is the most shocking band because their album Gossip just came out, and it only sold 12,000 copies first week. And not only that, it was a really, 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 really bad album. And this is from one of the bands that, in 2012 were probably the biggest band in the scene. They sold 60,000 copies first week with Feel, and they were playing huge venues, and Kellen was the biggest celebrity in the scene. And now they're down to selling like, what Bless the Fucking Fall sell. Like, they're down to like that level of a band, and like,
Straight up, the main outsold them this year.
that's so wild when you think about it, how big Sleeping were, and how, sort of medium sized the Main are now. It's unbelievable.
I mean,
This is the biggest flop. That's tough. There's another band on here I think we could say is a bigger flop, but this is definitely like in the conversation for biggest flop of the year from the scene. I mean,
For
the
sure.
last album, Madness, did I think about 35,000 first week.
Yep, right on the nose.
So I mean, we're talking,
That's a 65% drop.
it's fucking sad. I mean,
It's
they almost sold a
ridiculous,
third
man.
of what Madness did, and Madness was already a drop from Feel.
That
So,
was
it's
almost
like,
a half of what Field did.
so it's they're just, when you're at that level, when you're, if you can't even move 20,000 copies, you're not a big band anymore. It's pathetic. And it but this one, again, like All Time Low, this album's worse than the All Time Low album, I think.
This is one of the worst things to ever come out of 2017, man.
Yeah, like,
Collectively, it's just the biggest pile of shit.
I gotta agree with you. And like, I at least can have fun with this one in a way of just, I enjoy Kellen's douchiness on it, and I enjoy the spectacle and the laughter of it. Like, the All Time Low album, it doesn't even give me anything to laugh at. You know what I mean? It's just boring, mellow, straight through. Another band, and this was the most heartbreaking, I think, for me. And I think for you too, but correct me if I'm wrong, Paramore.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So what happened? I mean, what happened with Paramore, Tyler? Because I'm still, my head's still spinning from it.
The change was just too questionable. There's a difference between bands changing their sound and making it work. And the best scene example I can give to anyone is Bring Me the Horizon. What they did with Drown and what they did with That's the Spirit, when they released that music, it was the most undeniable thing, and it forced people to talk about it because it was so good.
There,
Paramore.
listeners, there's a reason you will never forget that first day when Drown the music video dropped
It
and you
was a
listened to it. You
spectacle.
will never forget that day, just like you'll never forget the Falling Universe Alone video day. Like, there are just certain days you will never forget, and that is one of them because of how well they executed Tyler's point.
Like, that song is undeniable. The songs on the new Paramore album are too questionable. Sure, it was a big deal when the first single dropped, but it wasn't straight up, this song is the best song of the year. It's just not in that conversation. I know you like it, but I think you could agree with that as well. Like, it's not the best song of the year. It's not of the caliber of what Drown was, like, musically and sonically. It's not on the same level. And because of that kind of set the tone for the whole album, and the whole rest of the album is such a shift for Paramore. That and it's not even the fact that they're pop songs and they're different. It's just the fact that they're not as well written as what was on self-titled, as we saw with sales. Like, they did 56,000 traditional, and yeah, they did 67,000 with streaming, but still, that's like a 40% drop from self-titled, which did 106,000.
And most of that streaming comes from Hard Times, which did really well streaming, and is, most people would agree, is like the best song on the album. And that song happened to have a lot of success with streaming, and I think that's the only reason they had a good streaming bump. But yeah, you're to the point, like, not only sonically and stylistically, like, this isn't just a subjective thing that Paramore failed, it's like a commercial fact thing. Like,
Exactly.
they only sold 50 whatever thousand copies first week. The last album did, 100, I think, right? Like one.
106.
Yeah, and they arguably had some of the biggest singles of their career. They should have came back bigger. This should have been a bigger album for Paramore. They should have sold more than self-titled because you're coming off of the hype of Ain't It Fun. You're coming off of the hype of Still Into You. You're coming off of the biggest, a Grammy win, the biggest years of that band's career, and they come back and become a pitchfork core alt radio band who sells 50,000 first week, and now they're playing fucking theaters again. And it's terrible to see, and I hate it because it's one of
It's
my favorite bands.
so sad to see Paramore fall. And you and I didn't expect it at all. We were ready
No.
for more self-titled like bangers and even just go poppier, like embrace Hailey as just the pop star that she could be. But instead they wanted a good review from Ian Cohen or someone at Pitchfork, and we got this album. And I will say that, as we've talked about on the show, there are salvageable moments from this album for
Yeah,
sure.
no. I mean, it's a decent album, but like that's not good enough from Paramore.
Exactly.
Paramore make great albums, and this isn't a great album. It's I think where did we come to? Like a 6 out of 10 for
Right
the album,
around there.
somewhere around
Yeah,
there.
between a five and a
Six to six and
six.
a half, and they're
Yeah.
and so a big problem too, they just didn't get a single going. Hard Times like did really well streaming on YouTube and Spotify, but on the radio it just didn't, it never happened. And there, I will say, like, to give them credit, they're pushing Rose Colored Boy now as the single. I think no,
Fake happy.
Fake Happy, yeah, and that seems to be having a lot more success so far than Hard Times did,
You
which
think
is
so?
yeah, I'm hearing it a lot more on radio.
It's at number 37 on alt rock.
Yeah, it's getting spins. I mean, it entered recently,
I
and
mean, Hard
it
Times
seems to be moving.
peaked at 13, so they
Yeah,
gotta
Hard Times
surpass
just.
13.
Yeah, I think it, based on what I've heard, it will. So, I mean, it might not, but it's a possibility. And, I just like, I couldn't find Hard Times on the radio. At least I'm hearing Fake Happy on the radio. It's at least a relief to be, I don't have to look for it. It's just kind of in rotation right now.
That's
And,
interesting, because I just feel like Paramore's completely out of the conversation.
yeah, no, but that song, that's surprising. That song is having success at radio. So, we got to give them that cred. Like, maybe Paramore have played the late game before.
Sure, sure.
Self-titled ultimately didn't have much success when it was released single-wise, and it wasn't until the later half of that cycle, when Still Into You took off, that all of a sudden, whoa, we got a hit here, and then that album started moving units and it went gold, So
Right, but I don't think Fake Happy is near the caliber of Ain't It Fun or Still Into You.
I don't think so either, man, but like Imagine Dragons and shit are crushing it on rock
Oh,
radio,
yeah,
so
well,
I don't know what
fuck
fits there right now.
that.
It might be a good fit, for all we know. We might just might not like the song. Other band I think we should mention is Motionless in White. This is a hard band, they signed a Roadrunner. They're coming off the most successful, one of the most successful albums of their career, Reincarnate, which sold 30,000 first week over, I think, right? Over that.
31, yeah.
31, yeah. For a band like them, that's fucking huge. They're on a major label. They're coming back. They got the image. And what did the new album do first week?
18,000. That's a
Boom.
42% drop.
Another fucking flop. And it feels to me like that album came out and nobody talked about it again.
It's
I mean, like,
completely forgotten.
I don't even know if it ever was in the conversation, Like, it's gone. It didn't happen, man.
It didn't, and like they really, I thought they had something with Loud. I wasn't the biggest
Yeah,
fan of
like,
that song, but I thought it was a good formula for, metal bros to play around in their trucks.
yeah, I thought a lot about it now because the rest of the album is so sort of mediocre core, like mediocre horror metalcore. Like it just the
Right.
rest of the album, it just wasn't. But Loud was different, right?
Right.
And I could see how Loud wouldn't appeal to a Motionless fan, but I thought like it could appeal to your average bro, just it's
Exactly.
such a simple you gotta be loud chorus. And then I thought about it more and I was like, you know what though? It's like a skate punk song, really. Like you should have like Derek Whibley singing that song from Sum 41. That should be a Sum 41 song when you think about it. And it really is just Chris's Manson vocals. They don't work on that type of song. It's a skate punk song. His Manson vocals just don't fit there. And I think that's why that song didn't do what it was supposed to do for them at rock radio.
Yeah, not at all. The album had just mediocre Motionless in White moments, and Chris just rips off Manson the whole time. It just doesn't. There wasn't anything special about that album besides the concept of Loud, and obviously it didn't work. It stuck around 19th to 20th when it was on rock radio, and then it just plummeted after a while.
Yeah, and as a listener of rock radio, I don't think I ever actually heard it played once.
It's a shame, man. It's a shame because there, you know, we were talking that band up when we were ranking our biggest scene bands. They were inside the top 10, and it was
they
like,
were huge.
Motionless in White had potential to become maybe a top 5 band, depending on what push Roadrunner could give them, but. This album is just forgotten at this point.
Shouts to Falling in Reverse for not flopping. That was like the big surprise. You know what I mean? Like we were all like, we were ready for them to be done, you know? And
absolutely.
They weren't, you know, I think they did 90,000 first week, which was really good for them considering all things. And we actually kind of liked the album. Like we thought it was a decent album. I think it was better than All Time Low's album, better than Sleeping's album, better than Paramore's album, better than Motionless's album.
Dude, straight up, I think Hanging On is inside my top five favorite songs of the year.
And I revisited Coming Home, like, this week.
Yeah.
I think we were even a little harsh on it. You know, like, we gave it an okay rating, but I think we were still even a little harsh on it. Like, there are some bangers on there.
And Epitaph is slowly, for whatever reason, pushing songs to radio and again, for whatever reason, Superhero is gaining on rock radio every
week. Yeah, somehow. The most, like, generic song on the album, you know, is having radio success. Do you see that Ronnie is gracing the cover of Rock Sound magazine?
I was just about to bring that up. Why?
It says, quote, "the only interview," which would make sense. I don't think he's done he's not doing the AP cover. Let's face it, he can't get the AP cover anymore. It's too big for him at this point.
I don't even know, man. Like, what is going on with that? There's another quote on that Rock Sound cover that I can't remember what it says. What else does it say? It's like, he's back or something.
Yeah. Back, like, what? You just put an album out. I think...
Like, where did you go?
right? You've been touring. You just put an album out, man. Like, is the old Ronnie back? Is that what we're...
Like,
remember
what?
on Coming Home, he put out that one song that was just totally blasting the media? It was like one of the last tracks.
Was it?
It starts off like "Hello, Earthlings."
Oh no!
Right here, right now is the chorus. You know,
was that? Yeah, that might have been one of the bonus tracks. Those fashionably late era bonus tracks.
Yeah, it sounds very fashionably late. It does.
Yeah, both of those bonus tracks were totally.
Yeah, it was like him just slaying the media. Like, what was the one deathcore band that? Chelsea Grin. Slayed the media. Yeah, it was like his version of that. Slay
Straight
the media
up,
song.
I think Chelsea Grin called me out directly in that song.
Hey man, Foo Fighters called you out directly once.
Foo Fighters did call me out directly once.
Anthony Green called me out. I've been called. We've all been there.
It Austin happened. Carlisle, Ollie Sykes. I remember. Yeah,
dude,
I remember.
Diddy was mad at me one time. That was
Diddy
that
was mad at
dude,
you.
So we've been there, you know. When you work in the industry, you just end up in places you don't think you're gonna end up in. You know,
never in a million years. But I mean, I don't know. It's crazy to think that Falling in Reverse can be considered a success this year, above All Time Low, Sleeping with Sirens, Motionless in White, Paramore.
Weird as fuck, but it happened somehow. And I don't know what to make of it, but you know, it was nice to reflect on it and what a shit show 2017 has been. It's just everything flipped over. Hopefully 2018, like, cause think about it. We got releases coming up from like A Day to Remember, you know? And,
So that's kind of what I wanted to do to wrap this convo up. Like, the scene is not in a good spot, but 2018 is going to be in a very defining year for the scene because we have releases from the biggest scene bands that haven't broken out yet coming. A Day to Remember, Bring Me the Horizon, maybe Pierce the Veil. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe it makes sense. Like, it's been 2 years, but who knows? These releases are going to be very reflective overall of where the scene is at.
A Day to Remember and Bring Me the Horizon are going to be like big fucking signals for whether or not this scene's gonna make it another year, bro, because I'm not
They're the
sure. You know what I
last
mean?
two.
Yeah.
They're the last two that we don't have a current reflective number for.
Yeah.
I mean, Pierce the Veil, but Pierce the Veil, Misadventures didn't do near as what it should have. It did like
That's a whole
55,000, but like,
it's a whole other
it
conversation,
is a
you
whole
know.
other conversation, but we can fit that in with the flops of
Yeah,
2017, you know?
yeah, I think didn't that come out in 2016?
It did, yeah.
Yeah, that's just it's a that's a that's we're not going on that rabbit hole. I mean, that's a whole episode. Misadventures is a whole episode. All right, we gotta move on though, Tyler,
All
and
right.
hit our next story, which is Knucklepuck. Knucklepuck put out a new song called Want Me Around. It's the third single from Shapeshifter. What do you think of it, Tyler?
This song f literally feels tired. It feels like it's gonna put everyone to sleep. And just the that melodic riff, like, it's okay. It could be good. I feel like if you put that in a different song, in the right song, it could fit well. The chorus feels so muddy, man. Like, what is going on with that mix? It feels like a puddle of oil and mud, and just it doesn't come out well. It literally, right now, we're recording Sunday night. It has 32,000 YouTube streams, 45,000 Spotify streams. Nobody's paying attention. This one fell super flat. I don't want to say it's over for Knucklepuck, but I think it's over for
This
Knucklepuck.
is you know, they're just bad at music. They're not good at music, man. Like, yeah, like my thought only thoughts on this song, it sounds like bad The Main or like bad Third Eye Blind. Like, it was a little bit of a, you know, it sounds like they're kind of trying to do that thing, but again, they're just not good enough musicians to pull it off. Like, it's less pop punky and more main-y, more 8120 core-y for them. So I was surprised. In a weird way, I think it's the best single we've gotten from Shapeshifter so
Wow,
far,
oh,
which is,
there's a statement.
but like, you know, we're talking like, you
Oh.
know, it's the best knife in my heart of the three, you know, like
Here we are on note to seeing comparing piles of shit again.
yeah, that's what we're doing. I mean, do you think the other two, I mean, it's a, I don't know, man. Do you think the other two were better than this one?
They are
Because
all
that last one
three.
was, I mean, I went on a biblical rant. You can listen to that episode,
You
but that
should.
last one really pissed me off.
Yeah,
This
I
one at
mean,
least didn't, I mean, I didn't like catch on fire and go up into a tower and scream. Like, this one was just, I was like, wow, they're like copying The Main and being bad at it, you know?
yeah, I don't know, man. I'm not here to compare
All
piles of
right.
shit. It's bad. Don't
What's
listen
your
to it.
score?
I'm at like a 4.5.
Okay, I'm at a 5.5 out of 10.
Okay.
Okay, let's move on to our next story, which is State Champs. The band are in the studio with Mark Hoppus right now, working on their third album. What are your thoughts on this, Tyler Sharp? State Champs
Hopefully,
gonna save pop punk?
no, but hopefully Mark can put them back on the right track. Like
You know,
it.
man, I really we did our Who's Gonna Save Pop Punk episode, and we didn't really, I don't think we talked about State Champs enough,
So State
because
Champs
like.
are a very interesting band right now because I dug down a State Champs rabbit hole a few weeks ago, and this band has all these major connections. They toured with 5 Seconds of Summer. They got a Halsey co-sign. They just featured on a Hoodie Allen song. And the last album did 12,000 first week. They have all of this outside momentum, like major
Okay,
connections.
12,000 first week is good for them at that point in their career. I think it was good. Like, real friends. That was essentially their debut. You know, I know it's not their debut album, but that was their like after they had been hyped up. That was their big release.
I
And you know,
felt
like
like
Real
they.
Friends did 10,000 on maybe This Place Is Changing or whatever the fuck that album is called. You know, they came out stronger than Real Friends.
See,
So, you
I
know.
think I regard The Finer Things as State Champs' best album, and All Around the
Okay.
World's a huge pile of shit. I
Yeah.
thought when they released All Around the World, they should have been at the same like foot for foot pace as Neck Deep, and Neck Deep did like
Yeah.
18 or 19,000. So
I just think Neck Deep had a head start on them. They were late. They were later than Neck Deep in Real Friends.
I just
As far, at least as far as hype and conversation goes. They showed up late. Like, when Real Friends were popping and Neck Deep were starting to pop, it was like, who's this band, State Champs? You know, they were just sort of coming out the woodwork.
Man, I
At
just
least in the as far as the general scene conversation was going, they were small when Real Friends were just starting to pop.
Dude, I think you're underestimating State Champs, man. Elevated was a big song. Like, that was a
Yeah.
big d every pop punk kid talked about that song.
I just remember they had a very small following compared to like Neck Deep and Real Friends back in the day.
I I just feel like they should have been foot for foot with Neck Deep, and I feel like they fell short on All Around the World and Back, but they obviously still have major people backing them.
Yeah, and they still have hype. I mean, dude, like, we got it. Like, they're bigger than Knucklepuck. Yes. I think at this point they're bigger than Real Friends for sure, you know.
Wow, absolutely. They passed them. I mean, I think they were bigger than Real Friends last album.
These are bands that they were probably behind at one point, and now they're well ahead of. So they're in a good spot, and like, having the OG Mark Hoppus, Blink-182, guiding them, I think is a good thing. And I've liked recent songs from the band. I used to hate them, but like, I see potential. I genuinely think Derek has a really good voice. I think he has one of the best voices in pop punk right now. So I would like, and we just had Neck Deep let us down with, what the fuck was that album called?
I can't, The Peace and the Panic.
The Peace and the Panic was a big letdown, you know? And but, so I would like to see this band succeed. I would like to see Derek's voice captured in a good way. And I hope Mark gives them some guidance. That's about all I have to say about it.
Yeah, I hope they get it going. I hope Mark can put them in the right spot. But as you bring up Neck Deep, we're talking about all the failures of 2017. I think Neck Deep's album might be regarded as the biggest scene success of 2017. How do you feel about that?
Yeah. 30,000 copies first week. You know, it just sucks that it had to be a bad album.
It sucks,
you know?
It's
one of those, the last album was so good that everyone went out and bought the bad album kind of situation, you know?
And because they didn't know they didn't know the bad album was going to be a bad album.
Can you blame them though? You know, you heard Life's Not Out to Get You and you had blind trust in the band, you know? That's where you were after hearing such a great pop punk album.
That's,
you know,
what happens.
You're gonna buy whatever the fuck they serve you. You're gonna eat it.
Absolutely.
But people learn. I'm sure. You know.
We have listeners.
Don't email. We have listeners who defend this album, so it's tough. You know. But I don't know if you really like it or you really want to like it or what. But okay. Let's move on to our next story, which is Pierce the Veil. So Pierce the Veil, and I don't know if you understand all this, Tyler, because I don't know that I do, but they did something. Mm-hmm. They put out on Spotify, it says it's an EP. Mm-hmm. It's Today I Saw the Whole World, the EP. Mm-hmm. And what it is, it's just Today I Saw the Whole World, the song, and then a new acoustic version of the song. And that to me is the news here, is that like, we're hearing a recorded acoustic version that we've never heard before, a new version of this song. Is this an actual EP, Tyler? Do you know? Or is this just some weird branding mix-up?
They are pushing it as an EP. Because I went back and I found the tweet for it that they sent out on Friday. And they said, we released Today I Saw the Whole World EP.
What a weird thing to do. I mean, like, maybe they're gearing up for this to be the next single. But, like, what? You'd push it as a single, not an EP. What a weird, a two-song EP? What?
I 100% agree with you, and I don't understand the bizarre angle that they're taking on it.
It's like, I'm thinking, is this a weird contract fulfillment, shady music industry thing going on, maybe, potentially?
It definitely crossed my mind. But let's get past the weirdness, and let's talk about this acoustic song, because I actually really like it, and I have an idea of maybe why, but I get classic Pierce the Veil vibes from the acoustic version of this song, and it got me thinking that maybe more Misadventures songs could be much better if they stripped them back and just had them acoustically written. Then I started looking at this, and did you see that artwork?
Yes.
Why do I love that cover so much?
It's kind of ripping off Kanye's The Life of Pablo. As far as the text goes.
Okay, so to me, it feels like it came straight out of MySpace 2006. And it feels like it should be the cover to, like, the best Screamo album that has ever come out. Like, that should have been the new Tragics full-length album cover.
Shut the fuck. All right, you just broke, like, you got us in trouble somehow there by bringing up the new Tragic.
Go Google the new Tragic, listener. But whoever made that cover.
Two guns blazing and a half-crooked smile, baby. I'm about that life, man.
I don't know how I feel about talking about that.
Shouts to Dallas though, man. Hope he heals.
Mad shouts to Dallas. And
okay, so yeah, I'm with you. I really love this song. Holy shit.
Isn't it great?
It's so much better as an acoustic song than the regular. Dare I say, I think, you know, I enjoy Circles in like a humming along kind of way. You know, like Circles is okay. It's a decent enough single, but I think this is my favorite song off Misadventures now.
Absolutely, yes.
And I totally agree with you. It done in this acoustic way, it has, I was getting like Flair for a Dramatic sort
Yes.
of mood in me. And I was like,
Yes.
I haven't felt this from Pierce in a while. This feels good. You know what I'm saying?
Right? It got me
Like,
excited about Pierce again.
yeah, it was like, maybe this is what Pierce needs to do. Like, slow it down and go into more of these moody acoustic sort of like clapping drives like this song is, just sort of fucking hover in the moment. Like this song kind of does that, and that's kind of what a Flair for the Dramatic was. It was sort of like a like hookah smoke floating in the room. You know what I mean? Like it just kind of floats and takes you on a journey and that's what the acoustic version of the song did for me. And I think Pierce got away from that on Misadventures. They were really just like, let's be a rock band and
Dude, I am so excited that you like this because there was a part of me that was convinced I only liked this acoustic song because of the artwork.
what's hilarious though is Lil Peep did it first with his song
Didn't
I
know if
Crash
we
You
were going to
Crash.
bring that up.
Yeah, Peep, Lil Peep, white SoundCloud rapper, he sampled this song before the acoustic version was out and he made his own acoustic version of it. So I don't know if they heard that and were like, yo, this sounds really good. You know what I mean? Like, I kind of wonder.
It definitely makes you wonder, man. Like, have they, you think they had to have, like, Pierce the Veil? There's a video out there of Pierce the Veil in a dressing room moshing to Knocked Loose songs. They've heard that Lil Peep song.
They had to have, because, he's popping off and, he did their song. And,
Absolutely. But I found it insane that this made me excited about Pierce the Veil again.
yeah.
But this, it has such an emo vibe to it, everything from the
It
artwork to the
does.
song, and it's just like it threw me back to 2006, man, in the best way.
This feels like old Pierce the Veil for sure. And,
Absolutely.
looking at it, Misadventures so far has sold like 110,000 copies, I think. And let's compare that to Collide with the Sky, which sold over 300,000 copies. So that shows you kind of where Misadventures lands as an album. I think we can consider it a failure from the band.
It just didn't live up to the hype. I mean, to
Nope.
be fair, Pierce the Veil created an amount of hype that could be never lived up to.
And then they waited way too long to try to live up to it.
And they just couldn't, you know, they
And then
tried
the
way
Divine
too
Zero
hard.
shouldn't have happened, and there's just so many things.
Absolutely. So it feels good to feel excited about Pierce the Veil again.
Yeah, in
I
such a
hope this
random,
lasts.
sketchy way with this sketchy EP that, dude, but there's no promo around it. Like, the label ain't tweeting about it. The band aren't, po it, like, where's all, why aren't they,
There's
when you
no
release an
press.
EP, you announce, yeah, there's no P, there's no press release. What is going on? Like, it's really sketchy and weird, and maybe that's what's exciting about it. I don't know. I also, dude, just that opening acoustic, line, you kind of get like a From First to Last Emily vibe, which I really,
Right?
really, really dig.
I
Like, what the
felt the
f
exact same
yeah, I was
thing.
like, this is a good move for them, and I hope fans know about it. Like, the only reason I knew about it is because I saw it pop up on Spotify, but like, I hope it spreads throughout the fan base and they catch wind because this is like a good Pierce moment.
Same. Dude, seeing that album artwork lined up against all of their other album artworks on iTunes is the most funniest thing because this looks like it should be their very first release as a band
Right.
before they were signed.
Okay, let's move on before we go and let's hit our pop story this week. For our pop story, what we wanted to do was our biggest, we sort of did our biggest surprises of scene bands already of flops. So with the pop story, we want to do who are our biggest like surprises as far as success stories go in pop music this year. Like right now, what's surprising us that's popping off aside from Cardi B, because we already had that conversation. But you want to start, Tyler?
Yeah, sure, I'll go first. So my surprise for 2017 is Post Malone's I Fall Apart. This song was released in 2016 on his debut album, which is called Stony, but it was never released as a single. It was kind of like just this song that was really good on the album, but it never got a single push. A few weeks ago, a fan-filmed live video went viral on Twitter of like 40 seconds of post playing this song at a show. And it got, right now it has over 130,000 retweets. Someone else posted it on Facebook, of course, someone ripped it, went viral on there, got crazy amounts of views. And here are the stats in the 4 days following it going viral of that week. It got 15,000 digital downloads and it got 10.1 million U.S. song streams just in the U.S.
It's doing really well on Spotify right now, too.
It's straight up blowing up, and it's becoming one of his biggest songs. And it's crazy because he's absolutely dominating right now with Rockstar.
Right.
So the label, being smart, is pushing this officially as a single later this month in October. I just think this is a testament to all bands out there. If you're listening, everything you do matters. And at any point, something can go viral. Like, this song wasn't meant to be a single, but because it was such a moment when he played it live, that just that night, it went viral, and now it's getting pushed as a single, and he's going to make so much more money off of it.
Yeah. It's wild that he has two singles burning at the same time like this. That's just crazy. Like, Rockstar was enough. You know what I mean? And now he's going to have two.
I know.
It's messed up. But yeah, so my biggest surprise, it's kind of in a similar vein and of like the unexpected sort of pivot thing, is Camila Cabello. So Camila Cabello is, for those of you who don't know, she's the member of Fifth Harmony who left and went solo. And the whole fucking industry got behind this girl. And they really backed her. She was going to be the next biggest star. And she released her debut single, Crying in the Club, and it didn't really go anywhere. I mean, it did decent enough in streaming, but like, it didn't get a lot of traction, and it wasn't this big blowout single. She got backing from like Lorde and some other people, and it was like a cool day when she released it and everybody was paying attention, but it just didn't have legs, you know. Nobody really remembered it. It was kind of just a day, and people really thought, you know, Camila was going to be like the next big thing. And Fifth Harmony, meanwhile, had I think a lot more success with like Down and some of those songs, and they were getting a good reception without her. So it was kind of like, oh, is, you know, at first that it looked like Camila was gonna just blow Fifth Harmony away, like she had stolen all their momentum. Now it was kind of looking like, oh, maybe Fifth Harmony are actually going to be better without her. And you know, they had that moment at the VMAs when a fake Camila gets blown off stage and they jump into their song. It's this beautiful thing if you haven't seen it. The VMAs start, there are five girls on stage, and right before they go into their song, Down, I think, with a fifth member who's the fake Camila gets blown off stage, and they will go right into their song. It's a gorgeous, it was just great, and a great stage moment. And it was all of a sudden looking like Camila was down and out. And then Havana happened. Havana is this song she released with Young Thug that just fucking blew up. And it's a totally different song than Crying in the Club. And now it's her biggest song she's ever released. And it's starting to dominate radio. It's owning Spotify. It's owning streaming. And it's kind of cool to me because it's kind of a different thing. And it's in her own lane. Like, there's a real sort of like, there's like an old world charm to this song. And it's just like, you just like, when you see an artist like Camila blow it the way she did with Crying in the Club, you don't think she's going to have a comeback this quickly. And she did. She put out two songs, Oh My God and Havana just took off, and it has Young Thug on it, who's a pretty poppin' rapper. And Camila is Cuban, for those who don't know, you know, so Havana is a nice tie-in of a title, and she's singing about, you know, how half of her heart is left in Havana, and just has a real charm in it, and it's a real cool lane to see a Cuban-American artist in. And I think it's smart because we're sort of in a post-Despacito world.
Right, exactly.
So the fact that she has glided over into a more Latin pop lane with a song like Havana, I think is genius and is going to pay off even more dividends than it already has. So that's been my biggest surprise.
Absolutely. I did not see it coming at all because I didn't like either of the singles.
Right.
I didn't think they were going to get any momentum at all. And we talked about Crying in the Club on the show. I liked it. I didn't think it was that bad. But it just didn't get any traction. And it's been insane to watch Havana just slowly climb. And listeners, if you want to tune in now, it's still climbing. Like, go look at the iTunes
chart. This is the start of it. Yeah. It's slaying, and this is the start. And it's just, it's that it's riding that Despacito Latin pop hype. You know, she just slid in at the right moment. And she's the perfect artist for it. She's Cuban, you know, so it makes sense. And I think her team realized that. And they really fucking like retooled real quick after Crying in the Club. They were like, okay, we can't do Christina Aguilera. We gotta do Despacito. You know what I mean? And it worked.
Absolutely. They're just throwing darts at a board, and I got one to stick really quick.
It's crazy to see it happen like that, though. You know? It's just, it worked that quickly.
It did.
All right. Well, that is it for the show this week, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. If you have any questions, you can write in to notetoscene@gmail.com. If you enjoy the show, please rate or and review us on iTunes. Leave us those 5 stars, and we will love you. All right. See you next week.